roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What is up, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty here on a Monday. Wow, do we have an event to cover? UFC 257 in the books. This past weekend out in Abu Dhabi, the UFC finished their third show in 8 days. It was their pay-per-view, the big one, with Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier in the main event. So, what happened? Well, we're going to unpack it all. Just the main event and co-main event is probably enough to talk about on the show. The lightweight division is, of course, the marquee division in the UFC because its biggest star is Conor McGregor. And, of course, arguably number two is Khabib Nurmagomedov, and he factors in as well. So we're going to go over all the results from not just those two fights. We're going to concentrate a lot on those two fights, that division, and then unpack the rest of the card as well, including all the different news nuggets that are out there. No guests today. It's just Goz and I and UFC 257. And, of course, if you want a question or comment in the chat room, you can always leave it, and we'll address it. So buckle up, folks. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Monday, January 25th. Oh, we're also going to talk a little bit of football.
Hola, amigos. Danny Segura dropping in. Just wanted to let you know about MMA Junkie's latest podcast. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish language show dedicated to all things professional fighting. Each Monday, we recap the major events from the weekend, plus we analyze the week's biggest news. We also bring you exclusive interviews with the best fighters, coaches, and experts in the Hispanic and Latin American scene. You can find Hablemos MMA every Monday morning on your favorite podcasting platform. Suscríbete y nos hablamos pronto. Chao.
As I was saying, we have our two teams that are going to participate in the Super Bowl, so we'll mention that as well. That's tremendous, the NFL season. But first things first, Dustin Poirier, congratulations to him as he defeated Conor McGregor in the main event at UFC 257. Goz and I were hosting a UFC 257 watch-along here on Sportscaster, and we absolutely lost our S. Because not that we didn't think Poirier could win. I think a lot of us said, hey, look, if he gets past the first or as the fight goes on, you know, maybe it favors Poirier. But a knockout that early in the fight, round two, I don't think anyone saw that one coming. Incredible. Hats off to Dustin Poirier, who really at this moment should be the undisputed lightweight champion. More on that later. But he took care of business, Goz, against Conor McGregor.
It's funny because you're right. Probably not a lot of people saw it going that way. I'm going to kind of give props to my friend Dante only because he had shared something with me when we were all picking how we saw this fight happen. And I mentioned this on our Triple G show with Richard Hunter. We all had our breakdowns and I think they all made sense. But at the end, I think he said, I think I'm just going to bet Dustin Poirier by knockout.
Yeah.
Because whenever we have these dumb discussions and we break it down and everybody makes great points, because don't we always kind of get left thinking, oh my God, I didn't see that coming. And he said with 2020 and the way that year went, he goes, I just feel like things are going that way. And so, and I was going to do it because for some reason when he said it, it kind of clicked in my head and I go, yeah, why not? I mean, that does sound like something that would make me and George jump up in the middle of a sportscaster and go, oh my God, we weren't expecting that. Because you know, all these fighters, eventually their buttons, they get hit, right? And Conor is yet to really go through something like that, just get slapped. And it happened, man. I couldn't believe it. I really couldn't, because if you watch the entire fight, you see that there were times where Dustin was keeping his hand down and Connor was just missing missiles. Very similar to the first fight. He was just missing them. And it gave you that feeling that at any second, he's going to hit one of these. It's going to hit Poirier and Poirier's lights are going to go out. But as the fight continued, you would see Dustin just kind of laying the foundation. He had this different confidence to him in this fight, starting off with that leg kick, and you could see it was bothering Connor. It just started, the tide started turning. But the thing about Connor McGregor and that power hand is you can never count it out. So it was just missing. So it was a fun fight in the sense that it still made you feel like anything can happen the whole time.
It goes, you keep saying it was just missing. Are you talking about Poirier just missing Connor?
No, Connor just missing Poirier with counter punches.
He hit him solid a few times, though.
He did, but there were a couple where Dustin would just drop his hand, and that hand would just fly right by his head.
Yeah, he missed a few, too, but he also landed. I mean, Dustin took his best punch, no matter what. Oh, a few of them, and even some good stiff, because he's a southpaw, some good stiff jabs, and even just some good, not necessarily hooks, but just power punches coming from the left hand, because Connor has dynamite in both hands. I mean, he really, really tested McGregor's power. How he kept standing, I don't know, because looked like a few of those would have taken him out, man. Credit to Poirier's chin. And just before the event started, well, that fight started, not the event, I did see Poirier by KO. It's actually on one of the sites that I frequent. It was Poirier by KO or sub plus 400. Because just Dustin Poirier to win, which includes the decision, was plus 240, plus 250, somewhere around there. But if you didn't want the decision and you just wanted the finish, I did see plus 400. Now, of course, I was thinking, could he sub him? Because Connor's four losses have all come from submission. He's never been knocked out. And that's kind of what more I was focusing on. But then I thought, well, I don't know if he's going to sub him. I think he would just decision him, you know, and that I saw more realistic. And because it didn't include decision, I just did a silly bet on 25 to win 1750 on the draw. But I did see that goes. But I'll be honest, I did not think KO like Dante did. Now, what I did think was, if you told me, hey, you fell asleep, the fight's over, he KO'd him, I would have thought the fourth or the fifth. I wouldn't have thought the second, because McGregor's still somewhat fresh. But what contributed goes was those leg kicks. Because it's not like, I mean, McGregor, I guess, tired, but he hadn't reached that exhaustion point yet. He just got hit with solid punches. But that the kicks definitely added up. I think they were on his mind. I didn't see him, like, buckling or anything. Now, McGregor will tell you otherwise. McGregor will tell you, whoa, my leg's messed up. I don't know if you caught any of the post-fight. But he was saying his leg was the size of a football. However, it didn't seem to really stop him. He didn't really switch his stance as much. So I think that was just the cumulative effect once the fight was over and he was giving respect to Dustin and Dustin's game plan. But Dustin was saying he was recognizing that it was affecting McGregor, you know, and then after that, he just went for it. And he said a few times he understood that he threw a leg kick but also got met with a counter shot. And that could have been dangerous because one of those, boom, right on the button, and maybe we're talking about a whole different thing here, you know. But that's not what happened. Dustin Poirier turned it around, and he was very, very surgical. When he first hurt him, he didn't just go after him and finish it like 2 seconds later. I mean, he kind of stood back, picked some spots, and then he mixed it up. There was uppercuts and hooks, and there was a nice shot to the body. And then, of course, he went back to the head. McGregor falls down, and then there was a couple hard pummels. And that's why he was left, you know, like really, really jacked up. But, wow, man. I mean, it was really worth the wait for these 3 weeks that we didn't have MMA. We had a nice run, and this one being the last fight on the last card of this eight of this run with three events in 8 days. It was worth it. Goes the co-main and the main were awesome.
Yeah, we always talk about a fighter like a video game, right? Their power meter and how it goes down. And you were talking about how in the later rounds, you could see Conor McGregor's power meter kind of going down. But there isn't just that power meter. There's that mental meter. And Conor McGregor maybe didn't tell us. Some of us could pick it up because obviously we were talking about it on Sportscaster. But there's also that mental meter that was draining every time he took one of those leg kicks. He knows better than anyone. It's his body. And he probably knew, I can maybe only take three or four more of these before I'm going to be on the ground and I can't do anything. So I think that kind of put a little bit more panic in Conor. I think it tried to get him to open up a little bit more. He played more into Dustin's hands. So really, when you think about what goes into a victory, it's not just Dustin Poirier. Some credit has to be given to Mike Brown, to the people in his corner, right? Those people all have some sort of effect on what he's going to do when he goes out there. And I think some props needs to be given to that man, because yeah. I've always heard from people that he's a very good coach, but behind the scenes, he's a good motivator and just kind of like a good friend. And so I think sometimes he gets lost a little bit in the shuffle, but I thought that was a great game plan, and you could tell right away it was hurting Conor.
Poirier alluded to that in the post-fight press conference. He said, Brown wanted me to work those legs. And McGregor probably spent half of the 20 minutes that he was up there on the dais talking about those leg kicks. So I do want to talk about that. But let's talk about Poirier and what comes of it. You know, so he defeats Conor McGregor. And earlier, Michael Chandler defeated Dan Hooker. And then in the press conference, Dana White was asked, hey, did you talk to Khabib? Was he impressed? And Dana White said, I did talk to Khabib. And Khabib told him something along the lines of, come on, be honest with yourself. Those guys don't have anything for me. I'm levels above them, you know? And again, man, if he told Dana, if something wows me, I might come back, then Khabib, we're waiting on you, pal, because something wowed us. Chandler was – we'll get to Chandler in a second, but that was pretty amazing over a tough Dan Hooker. Remember, Dustin Poirier just went 5 rounds with Dan Hooker. He didn't finish him. Michael Chandler finished him in 1 round. Mm-hmm. So that's got to be a wow. The backflip, he had a nice WWE promo. But okay, that one didn't get the job done. Poirier's didn't get the job done. Poirier's now won 2 times since he beat him, Khabib. He beat Dan Hooker, the fight I just mentioned, and Conor McGregor. And he finished Conor McGregor in 2 rounds. It took you 4. Now, of course, I'm not coming at Khabib. You know, I don't want a bunch of Russians attacking me on YouTube. I already get destroyed from Americans and others. But I'm just making points here. You know, if in fact he did say that, then I'm sorry, but 3 people have wowed me in the last few months. Oliveira, when he added the 8th fight to his win streak, and it was Tony Ferguson, and then the 2 I just mentioned, I would say he's got a decision to make, you know, if he was looking to get wild, because those guys are all in the running. Now, if he never said it, and that was Dana just kind of trying to, like, stretch things out, which, by the way, I'll give him credit. In the post-fight press conference, Dana was saying, yeah, maybe that was me, you know, wanting to see if I can convince him or whatever. He never actually said if he misquoted Khabib in any way or whatever. But, again, if he didn't misquote him, then I think Khabib really should give it some serious thought, or just say, okay, I shouldn't have said that. I'm just retired and that's that. And if he didn't say it, then what are we doing here? I mean, that should have been for the title, and Dustin's right. He should be wearing the undisputed belt, because what are you going to do? You know, like they asked him, so now what, Dana? Dustin versus Chandler, your 2 winners? And he goes, yeah, I'm good with that. Then they ask Poirier, he goes, I'm not good with that. He goes, I don't want to fight Michael Chandler. He goes, no disrespect to Michael Chandler, but he's only 1-0 in the UFC. I've been in this company for over 20 fights across 2 divisions, and I would rather fight someone else that's also done what I've done. Highs and lows, picked himself up, dusted himself off, and is now in a position to do it. And then somebody goes, like Oliveira? He goes, just like Oliveira. So who knows? Now, it's good to get that guy's input. But in the end, the UFC is the ones that decide who wants to do it. I don't know if they want an Oliveira Poirier title or if they want a Chandler Poirier title. something has to be said for the fact that they had Chandler there on Fight Island in case Gaethje or Khabib didn't make it. They were ready to anoint him as one of the two. So I don't know, man. They also asked Oliveira to fight Chandler, and he said no, so Hooker stepped up. Ugh, man, so much here. That's why we're spending a lot of time on this one topic alone. But I said a lot. Do you want to address any of that?
I think some of the blame needs to go to Dana White here. Because at some point, enough's enough with Khabib. The guy said he's retired. The only reason he's giving you anything to go off of is because you keep asking him, you know? And I don't know how many times we've heard come out of Dana White's mouth, when a guy talks about retirement, that could be it. Well, guess what? This dude don't shut up about retirement. Let him go. We would all love to see him fight, but the guy doesn't want to fight, and he has his own reasons. And all you people out there that are saying he's scared, or get the fuck out of here, all right? That guy's not scared of anything, okay? He's just done. He's done. Let him go. Dana White is the one that's dragging this shit out, and I think it's really dumb because Dustin Poirier, that look on his face, man, he was absolutely right. He should have been holding a belt that night. He really should have. Everything that he went through, I can't believe that he didn't have a strap around his waist that night. So now we're stuck here with this pickle of who really deserves it, where do things go from here. But it's Dana White that's holding things up. So I'm tired of talking about if Khabib, because the only thing we really had to go off of was Khabib saying, if something spectacular happens, maybe I get the motivation. Well, I mean, what more do you want from Michael Chandler? I mean, you can't decapitate the guy, right? There's really nothing left he could have done other than throw him out of the octagon that we haven't seen. We haven't seen Conor McGregor get finished in that fashion. That happened. If that's not enough to impress you, if there's a guy with a great jiu-jitsu game where possibly you could say, hey, man, I not only survived that, I took it to him. Maybe I submitted him or I beat the crap out of him. If that doesn't motivate you, then fine. Go. I would love to see him fight again. Like I said, I'm not trying to be a dick. I would love to see Khabib come back. But if he doesn't want to, then he doesn't have to. We should respect that and let him go, and let's move forward with what we have left.
Yeah, perfectly worded. There's not much I can add to it. Anybody thinking that he's scared? Come on. He just went through McGregor, Poirier, and Gaethje in his last three title defenses. If I'm not mistaken, it's those three. Yeah, he's not scared. He's definitely not scared. I think he's just done. Look, the guy just lost his father less than a year ago to this virus that also flipped his village upside down. You know, so luckily others survived, but that had to have been pretty scary ordeal to go through. And, you know, a lot of fighters are starting to consider retirement, you know, at a younger age, and it could be, CTE or whatever. Maybe they're just making better money, and they just, you know, it's just a ruthless sport, man. It is a ruthless sport. I saw Dan Hooker take off his gloves as they were introducing Michael Chandler as the winner. And then he kind of like hung around, and I thought maybe he had given Anik the signal, like, I'd like to say something. But in the end, we didn't hear anything. But then in the post-fight press conference, they asked Dana White, they said, hey, he left his gloves there. Have you heard anything? He goes, no. So we'll see. I'd love to see Dan Hooker still fight. But as great as he looked against Felder, you know, and that one was a win. That one was right after beating Iaquinta as well. He has lost two in a row, and those two have been, you know, one of them was a war and one of them was a vicious KO. So maybe some time off and then come back and see what's up. If he still wants to fight, he's still young enough to fight. But what I've learned about Dan Hooker is the guy's pretty sharp. He's got his own gym. He's his own manager. He wants to manage other fighters. He's got a good head on his shoulder, you know, and maybe he's just feeling like, you know, this might be it. Who knows? Either way, congrats to all four. I thought all four handled themselves like professionals, whether it was the press conference or making weight or just showing up to try to do the job. You know, shout out to all four.
I want to share a message here in the chat from K Hurley 104. He says, if Conor would have won in fantastic fashion against Dustin, it might have been a different story with Khabib, but now it's completely over. I said going into this fight that I feel like there was absolutely nothing Conor McGregor could have done to make. I just think Khabib doesn't want to give him that fight. He doesn't want to make that guy any more money. He doesn't want to give that guy any more shine. So I feel like he could have punted him into the third row and nothing would have changed. I really felt like the only guy going into all of this in the weekend that had any chance whatsoever of bringing Khabib out was Michael Chandler. And I said he had to do something completely spectacular, which he did, not just in the fight, but in the post-fight and his speech that he delivered. He did everything perfectly. If that's not enough to get Khabib off the couch and back, I really don't think there's anything out there. That's why I think we need to move on at that point.
The only thing he left out was, come on, let's test out American wrestling versus Russian Sambo. I think he had said it in a pre-fight, but I would have loved to hear it because I know that Khabib is huge on his wrestling. You know, like if you actually want to play with him, play around with him, and you see him in person, you shake his hand, try and pretend like you can take him down. He'll mess around with you. Like, that's just a lot of, not just Khabib, but Cormier. A lot of those wrestlers are like that. Russia versus USA. I don't know what else I could think of, honestly, that you can do. I mean, if Chandler had an undefeated record, I'd say somebody's almost go. Try everything. Throw everything at the wall. But Chandler didn't impress Khabib. He didn't impress Poirier. He impressed the hell out of the rest of the world. He got 50 grand, including Dana White, who's saying this might have been the best debut he's ever seen. Now, a lot could be argued there because Juan Anderson Silva looked pretty good against Chris Lieben as well about 15 years ago.
Put yourself in Khabib's shoes, though. What do those four guys bring to the table that he has never seen before? Is Michael Chandler going to bring something that you're going to say, ooh, I've never faced anybody with that? I don't think so. The only guy that really brings something that you could maybe say Khabib has never been tested on is Charles Oliveira and his jiu-jitsu. There's motivation right there. That's a guy that I think if you can beat, maybe even take that game to him and submit him or put him in that situation. That's something that I think he's never seen. But really going into this, I honestly think Khabib wasn't going to do it no matter what.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say Chandler and his wrestling. But look, Chandler reached the same level as Gaethje. They were both standing on the podium. They were both Division I All-Americans. Chandler was just at more of a powerhouse university for wrestling, you know, so a little bit of a higher stage in that regard, but they both were all Americans. Neither one was a finalist or a winner, but either way, you know, an All-American's very, very impressive. It's just that neither Chandler nor Gaethje uses it much. I think Chandler uses it a little bit more, but he really hasn't as much lately. He's got power, and Gaethje, same thing. He's got power. He's got kicks. Gaethje never even got those kicks off. Oliveira does have black belt jiu-jitsu, which Poirier can claim to have as well. It's just that Poirier doesn't use it much. He did submit Max Holloway once at the Mandalay Bay. I saw it. But he doesn't use it as much, and he's not, I think, at that level of Oliveira where he just can throw a lot at you, you know, at you. And he's programmed to try and submit you first before he'll knock you out, whereas Poirier, I think, wants to knock you out before. You know, okay, we wind up on the ground. Sure, I'll test my jiu-jitsu, but man, I can't wait to knock you out, is what Poirier's thinking. So I don't know. I think Khabib just probably didn't say what Dana said. I think Dana was hoping that Conor would win and just touch a button, you know, a personal button, and he'd have his fight. And look how this blew up in a way. Not only is McGregor not. Well, for one, he didn't win, so he's not in a position to fight for a title, and Khabib wants nothing to do with it. It's almost like he lost two stars in one night, although we're not saying McGregor's retired, but what he lost was that big fight that probably would trend to break a lot of records. What he's saying is that Khabib or Poirier versus McGregor is in the top two for most pay-per-views sold in UFC history. Number one is when McGregor fought Khabib. That one sold 2.5 million pay-per-views. Number two is when McGregor fought Nate Diaz the second time. It sold 1.65 million pay-per-views. So if it's number two, we know that it's more than 1.65 and less than 2.5. So that's a great, great event for the UFC and ESPN. This is really ESPN running point now on pay-per-views. And at $70 a pop, they just made themselves a lot of money. But circling back to what's important, because it's not like we get a cut of that pay-per-view. So circling back to what's important, what do we do about the title? This is the last thing I know. And as I've been working on the rankings since early this morning, late last night, I've been thinking, well, what to do with Habib? Because Habib keeps reiterating he's just not coming back. But yet Dana White, up until 36 hours ago, said he felt like there might be, you know, a glimmer of hope. But what I remember Dana saying was that Habib was going to fly back to Vegas, and so was Dana, and they were going to talk this week. So I'm going to keep Habib in the rankings one more week at number one. But I got a feeling that this meeting, or if they don't meet at all, I think they're just going to figure out what's going to happen. Now, I don't know if they'll say we're stripping Habib and this is your title fight, or we're just stripping Habib and then we're going to let the guys relax and get back to their families, and then we're going to figure out what's next. I don't know. But he did say that Habib would be in Vegas and that he would be with them. So I think this after this week, we will know something and definitive. Maybe Habib can think about it a little bit more. Maybe he'll listen to shows like this or social media or something. Maybe he heard something in the post-fight press conference, you know. But it does really sound like Habib wants to stick to his retirement. And God bless him, man. It was a great career. And if he's done, he's done. It sucks because I love watching him fight. He really made me fall in love with his style. He just takes you down and suffocates you. And he started to develop some hands. He knocked down McGregor in round two of their fight. I didn't forget that. So we'll see. We'll see what's up. We'll see what's next, you know. But who do you think? Maybe I just asked you that. I don't know. But it's Poirier's one of them, right? It's either going to be Oliveira or or Chandler. Because this is where it gets tricky, goes. They said to Poirier, hey, man, are you interested in a third one? He goes, yeah, I am. He goes, but I'd also like to fight Nate Diaz. And then he went out of his way to say he doesn't want to fight Chandler, but that he would fight Oliveira. So according to Poirier and the criteria of how you come up with two fighters to fight for a world title, it sounds like Poirier versus Oliveira makes sense. Because Poirier versus Nate Diaz doesn't make sense for the title. And Poirier versus McGregor, part three, though I'd like to see it one day, it doesn't make sense right now for the title. So it's almost left with Poirier will fight Oliveira for the title. The UFC is open to Chandler versus Poirier for the title and Oliveira versus Poirier for the title. I imagine the guy's got an 8-fight win streak and he just beat Tony Ferguson. So what do you think is going to happen, since it appears to be a 3-horse race with Poirier having at least one of the positions locked up? Who do you think the UFC will decide on?
I'm going to give you the blueprint. Okay. Here's what I think is going to happen. If Habib says, okay, I'll come back, the only guy he'll come back for, I think it's probably Michael Chandler. I think they would give him that shot. If Poirier, if Habib says he's gone, then I think it's going to be Oliveira and Poirier for the title. But the way it should be, it honestly should be Charles Oliveira's shot, in my opinion. But they're not going to do that. They definitely wouldn't bring Habib back for that fight. That's just not going to sell. It's something with Charles Oliveira that fans can't gravitate to him. He doesn't really speak English.
Even though he just beat Ferguson, though?
Yeah. I just don't think they would do it. They're not going to see the dollar signs on that one. They would see the dollar signs behind Michael Chandler. And let's call it the way it really is here. Michael Chandler is probably something that's making these guys foam at their mouth right now, right? Good-looking kid, good on the mic, great fighter, former champion in another organization. I think the last thing they want to do is give him another fight and risk him not being able to fight for the title one day. So I think they may just kind of go with that old, what have you done for me lately, and say, that's why we're giving him to Khabib. It's Bellator versus UFC. They'll spin it somehow where they can pass over Poirier and they pass over Oliveira, because it's all about money. At the end of the day, this is business. It's all about money for them. But what should happen is it should be Charles Oliveira. If they just strip Habib, then I think I'll be Poirier and Oliveira.
Well, they won't need to strip him because he vacates. That sounds pretty much spot on. So yeah, if Habib stays, then you're saying it should be Oliveira because he earned it, but more than likely it would be Poirier because it's the biggest fight that they can sell. And to Poirier's credit, even though Habib dominated him, Poirier has gotten out and gotten two quality wins since losing to Khabib. Okay. And if...
Wait, that's not what I said, though. What? I said if Khabib does stay, then I think the UFC is going to try and shove Michael Chandler down everybody's throat.
Okay. Maybe. And here's how they could play it. They could say, well, Poirier, you didn't want Chandler. So you got these other options of what you want to do. Then you go fight Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz is already firing back at him saying, let's do it. That'd be interesting. Poirier versus Nate Diaz. And Chandler versus Khabib for the title.
What do you do with Oliveira, though? They can't do that.
Yeah, Oliveira would get... Well, I don't know what you would do with Oliveira. Oliveira's got to get somebody. Okay. So Oliveira versus Poirier. But why would Poirier want to fight Oliveira and not be and it not be for the title?
Well, he wouldn't have a choice in this scenario, right? Because
if the UFC beats him to the punch and says Khabib staying, and they give it to Chandler, then yeah, I guess that's telling Poirier, well, you figure it out. Now, would Poirier want Oliveira? He seemed warm to it. He really seemed warm to it.
The UFC is going to spin it this way. They're just going to say Poirier just lost to Khabib. That wasn't that long ago. He had his chance. We're going to give Khabib new blood. He has to be motivated. That's how they spin it.
Yeah. I wanted to see Ferguson versus Nate Diaz. But now that McGregor lost, do we do that trilogy?
Connor and Diaz? I think if you say Nate Diaz, there should be no other word that comes, no other name that comes out of your mouth than Connor McGregor. Now is the perfect time to do that fight. If you don't do it now, I don't know what you're waiting for. I don't know what has to happen in life other than they accidentally walk into the cage at the same time and you go, hey, they're here. Let's put on a fight. There is nothing else that could possibly happen that would make this fight make more sense right now.
Yeah. And I was thinking about something. When McGregor was doing his pre-fight interviews, you know, he said, guys, I'm still young. I still got a few more years. I love this game. I think he even said something like, I'm actually just getting started, you know? So, because a lot of people were like, you got a lot of money. You've done it all. What are you back here for? And he was giving those types of answers. Like, this isn't just me checking in and then see you in a year or two. He goes, I kind of want to go on a run. But again, that's McGregor thinking, that's because I beat everyone up, you know, and I'm just going to line them up and make a lot of money and make the Forbes list. Now that he lost, I don't know if it's different. So I say that because what if he fights Nate Diaz and loses? Would McGregor even be anything at that point? I mean, can he still be the notorious Conor McGregor and showing up in yachts or Rolls Royces and making people wait 30 minutes when he's dropped a couple? Like, I mean, does that mystique drop, or are fans riding with him no matter what, anytime, any place? You know, how do you think that works?
During a pandemic, I think it probably means nothing. If he fought in Ireland, he could lose 10 in a row. I think people would still be cheering and fired up so they could sell something like that. But yeah, when you're just talking about his position, that's what's always kept him relevant, is nobody's really had one over on him. Nate Diaz, that thing kind of got evened out. What are you going to do? Floyd Mayweather versus, I mean, okay, Floyd, you got him. I mean, who gives a shit, right? It's boxing. It's supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if he were to lose another one, then I think there's just too many guys out there walking around. What was cool about putting him on a dais with a bunch of people was there was rarely a guy that had something to say, except when they had Duffy up there on one of them. He did have every right to go, you know, I slept you. But he was very quiet and didn't say much. So that's what makes him entertaining. He can get in people's faces and say a lot of things. But now he doesn't have very many cards. And if he took another loss...
The trilogy is, you know, when you lose a trilogy, I just imagine you lose a little bit of that swag. And if he fights Poirier or Diaz, you know, because it's pretty easy to go, hey, it's 1-1, 1-1, you know, and there's still that eventual fight that can happen that always kind of keeps you in the game. But when it's 1-2, I don't know. Now let's think about this for a second. McGregor, the monster that he is, is that he comes from a country that loves their athletics, their sports figures, but especially combat sports. Ireland, England, Philippines, Mexico are just some that jump out where those fans will travel. You know what I mean? We've seen it. Us being here in the fight capital of the world, we've seen it. When Pacquiao has lost a few fights, but he fights again, we still see a lot of Filipinos raid the Mandalay Bay because that's where he stays. Right. But when he kind of had his mystique taken away, I guess, from Floyd or maybe Marquez, did you see less fans? Or what do you think? Like that's what I mean. And then think about Chavez when he eventually lost. Was he still pulling people? Canelo is another guy that's big, you know, obviously from Mexico. Is he still pulling people after the Floyd loss, which was years ago? I would almost say no, right? I mean, we've still seen the fans. So I think the fans will still come out and back their guy.
Because they're what represents their country. They may not be the best fighter in the world, but they're the best fighter. Canelo Alvarez is the best fighter coming out of Mexico. Right? Manny Pacquiao is the best Filipino fighter ever from the Philippines. So you back him for that. But as far as the casual fan, I think they probably lose a little bit of interest. I mean, it's always going to be some kind of a draw. But yeah, I think they back him because that's just your guy from your country. It makes your country proud. So I think they always...
Should he just stay nice guy McGregor like he was all week and just come out and fight and fight and fight and have some fun and forget about the whole I'm perfect, I walk on water, no one's ever seen anything like me? Because that's gone. He's not undefeated. He's not a champion. He's not much less a champ, you know, and he lost to his heated rival, Habib. He's 1-1 versus two adversaries in Diaz and Poirier. So maybe if he just took some of that pressure off, I'm like, do you really have to have these silk pajamas? And, you know, I mean, like Ric Flair, he could write his own script because it's predetermined in pro wrestling. So he could honestly say, I'm going to get rid of this guy in 60 seconds. Yo, Vince, you got to have my back here. I got to get rid of this guy in 60 seconds. It benefits me and it benefits WWE, you know? Yeah, sure, let's do it. Floyd stayed undefeated. Habib is undefeated. But all those guys that were larger than life, you know, they weren't in MMA. And in MMA, anything can happen in any moment. So I'm just wondering if he could just, I don't know. I mean, like, he's already amassed the fortune, but I think he's so worried about this brand and this image and all that that he carries a lot of stress and probably I don't know, man. I just want him to just go back to a dingy gym and just do an 8-week camp and come out and fight. You know what I mean? Instead of having to worry about, hey, coordinate the Rolls Royces and this and that. Like, if the casual fan's not along for the ride anymore, then just worry about your true Irish fans and the true fans that are sticking with you that could care less in what you show up in. They just want you to compete, have fun, and win.
Well, the good thing about Conor is he's able to build his brand himself with the things that he says. Sometimes it's not always has to be what he does in the cage. It's the things he says. So if he just comes back and gets another win, it almost doesn't matter who it's over. As long as he does it, what's the first thing people say? He's back. Connor's back. And we're right back in that same boat again where he becomes sellable. So, I mean, that guy's got 9 lives. All he's got to do is get one more win. He's right back in conversations. But he probably can't utter names like Habib or whoever's up at the top at that moment. But he can pick a few fights here and there. You know, I'm sure he can very easily pick a fight with Tony Ferguson. He could very easily pick a fight with a Michael Chandler or something down the road. Guys that he hasn't fought before. Justin Gaethje, hey, I think it's time, you know, that sort of thing. Because he's fun to watch. He's a good fighter. But I just think the guy's got 9 lives. But you're right. Like, I think Dana White said it right in the post-presser. He's a Rocky fan. He says it's kind of like the Rocky III moment.
Rocky III. He's
got to go back to that dingy gym. By the way, poor Apollo, man. His gym gets torn apart, huh? Like, it was a fucking slum or something. It was just old. That's all. It was just a lot of cats in there.
Well, yeah. Some leaks and rats. And
there were rats?
I thought I saw some rats, right?
I don't think anybody's going to train with rats. Can you imagine?
I'm not saying there was a bunch like kicking back, smoking a cigarette, watching the train. I think there was a scene where you might just see like a rat. And I remember Paulie walking in going, what are we doing here? You know, and like something was leaking. I think a little rat went around the corner. But I don't know, man. I was thinking about something. Poirier lost 6 fights in his career, and he's never been like, how can I put it to you, a sweetheart of the sport, like your Rondas, like Masvidal, and the run he had recently, and Connor. But Poirier doesn't want it, man. The only thing that guy wants to do is get back to Louisiana as fast as he can and hug and kiss his daughter and spoil her and be with her and write a check to the Good Fight Foundation and be with his wife, and that's it, you know. Whereas those other guys, they want to do all that. But first, I want to stop by at the Rolls-Royce dealer or the Lamborghini dealer or the Hublot, you know, watch shop or whatever. It's like they're programmed a little bit different. But what happens when they lose? I think it really shakes them to the core because they really believe in this larger-than-life image, you know. And I was just wondering, and I know I'm segueing here a little bit, but at the end of the day, do you think when they all sit back, they'll go, okay, I may have set myself up and taken some hard falls and maybe a little bit of depression when I did lose, but boy, was it a fun ride? Or do you think someone like Poirier can go, man, I never got caught up in it at all, and that's why I've always been, you know, I've had a tranquil life, and I'm at peace even though I'm 50 and 60 and maybe I never got in a limo or a private jet or whatever, but guess what? Look, I'm chilling right now. I'm not saying Masvidal's there, but Masvidal hasn't fought since Kamaru Usman, and I just feel like he's waiting for like some sort of a perfect scenario. I gotta imagine by now they've extended offers to him. Kamaru didn't concuss him or anything like that, but I think he's calculating and making sure his next move is perfect, you know, and he gets paid what he wants to get, but he's missing this valuable time that I think a lot of fighters, when they put their ego aside, they can go in there and they just kind of write their own script. Same thing with McGregor, you know. And then even if you tie in Ronda, look at the fall from grace that she had because they have this larger than life deal, you know what I mean, that they're so concerned about. Whereas the other fighters are just, I lost, take it on the chin, I'll be back, boom, you know. In the end, I wonder if they actually have a more fulfilling life.
I think they do. I think it takes time to realize these things, though. I think you have to get older and just be retired for a while to kind of realize what it is you did and what you accomplished in life. A lot of fighters think about what it's going to be like, but I don't think until you're in those shoes, you'll realize and appreciate, really. From interviews that I've heard with other fighters, it just seems like it takes about 5 years or so for them to be retired to actually be able to comprehend everything that happened and what was actually worth what. And you know how many times you hear fighters get asked, like, what was the most important fight of your career? And we're always expecting it to be this big fight, and they'll just randomly give you this one fight that meant so much to them. And I think it just takes time for them to realize all those things. I think Dustin Poirier, I think he really wants to be a champion, obviously. But I think he'd be okay years from now. I think he'd look back at everything accomplished, and I think he'd be all right with it. Probably doesn't know it now, but I think he'll realize it later.
Like, let me ask you this. Who do you think leads a happier life right now, Mayweather or Tyson?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'm going to say that's really, really tough. I'm going to say maybe Tyson.
So do I.
Just because if you ever hear a Floyd Mayweather interview, the one thing that he always gets upset about is that people never really embraced him very much.
Right. They didn't respect his path to 50-0.
Right.
For one, he should be 49-0. That 50-0 is ridiculous. That would be like Khabib saying, well, I'll take Jake Paul on for my 30-0 fight. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's ridiculous. And he does want to be included amongst those Tysons and Leonards and all the names, you know. And a lot of times he gets left out of those. Like if they go, just give me 4. If you say, give me the 10 best, sure, Floyd's in there. Some people maybe may even put him in the, you know, your best 5. But a lot of people also leave them out of a best five or my super sevens. You know, it has to get to 10 before they're included. And why? Because he navigated his career around, you know, certain matchups. He did eventually get to a couple, but not when I think fans wanted to see it. And that's why I think Tyson's like, yeah, I lost, but man, I competed at the right time. And I don't have any of those types of regrets. Same thing. How about Duran versus Floyd and Sugar Ray versus Floyd? Don't you think those two are a little bit more happier? Like when you see them out and about, they're commiserating with their opponents, even the ones that beat them. They can talk about those moments. I think Floyd is very careful in what he says, and he wants to keep pushing the perfection angle. And I don't know. I think he has a little bit more of a uptight life, honestly. And I'm not sure that he enjoys it as much as some of these other guys, you know. And I think a lot of it comes from that respect that those other guys get from the boxing media, their own peers and fans. And again, even if you say, man, hey, Sugar Ray, I remember them all, you know, and you lead off with a couple of the ones he won. When you beat Hagler, you know, when you won your gold medal, man, even that one in Montreal against Duran, that's the one that didn't go his way. I still think he's okay with talking about it, you know what I mean? Because, again, they didn't get caught on this whole, like, I walk on water, I'm above all of you or whatever. No, fool, you're good at what you do, but you're a human.
Some people don't realize that there are different ways of looking at combat athletes. Floyd Mayweather is the greatest boxer that ever lived. Hands down. I'll argue it all day for him. He's not the greatest fighter that ever lived. And there's a difference between a fighter and a boxer. A boxer is Floyd Mayweather. A fighter is Sugar Ray Leonard. Okay? Roberto Duran, he's a fighter. Okay? There's a difference. Those guys don't duck anyone. They weren't afraid to lose. They just wanted to go down as somebody that never backed down from anything. And there are times in Floyd Mayweather's career where people point at and they say he should have fought this guy 5 years earlier, or he shouldn't have ran away from that guy, or he shouldn't have waited for this guy to lose. He shouldn't wait for people to chase him down. He should be the guy calling them out. That's what Ali did. Ali's a fighter. Muhammad Ali was a fighter. There's a difference between those guys. When you put him up against Floyd, the way their careers unraveled and the way they asked for fights, the way they took fights, there's just a big difference. And I think Floyd has problems distinguishing the two. All day, I will argue he is the greatest boxer of all time. His defense, his movement.
Well, Roy Jones is pretty damn good too, though.
Roy Jones is pretty good.
And boxing purist, you know. But yeah, I get what you're saying. Look, I mean, if there was 400 people in the line, all boxing fans, and they knew that sitting at those little tables, like Virgil, you know how Virgil's sitting at that table and no one's in line for him. He's got his Sharpie out, and he's got his 8x10s ready to sign. There's 400 people and there's four superstars: Tyson, Floyd, Duran, and Sugar Ray. One would think, well, when all 400, when they open the doors, they're going to probably even out so that it's 100 in each line, you know? And you're going to get a shot to get a signature from all of them, but that's not what's going to happen, man. Everyone's going to probably run to Tyson. Well, not everyone, but a lot. And then the others are going to run to probably Sugar Ray or Duran, probably a tie there. And then Floyd's going to have the smaller line. Now, again, all those will circle back and get to Floyd. But that magnetic thing is going to be attracted from other fighters. Now, in MMA, Conor will still have that big rush. Why? Because I think these losses, in a way, humanize him a little bit. He had his run, but I really hope that going forward he just – I don't know, man. I think there's still a lot to – him being so worried about everything else that he has to do. Like when I was listening to the, here's what I'm getting at. When I was listening to the press conference, he was in awe. He was in such awe over those leg kicks. He almost acted like that was the first time he had heard of them. You know, he's had to have seen them. And I'm sure somebody's probably done something to him in practice, not on purpose, but along the way. Oh, you got my calf. Oh yeah, I was aiming for your thigh, whatever. But because he's got such great hands and he's either been taken down and choked or he's knocked somebody out, maybe he's never even gotten to that point, but he had to have studied these opponents. You know, Poirier's thrown leg kicks before. Poirier's been the victim of leg kicks. If you watch Poirier versus Jim Miller, you see, holy cow, Poirier could barely walk after that fight, you know, because of what Jim Miller did to him. Mike Brown teaches a lot of his guys to throw these leg kicks. You know, are we going to – what am I going to do? How am I going to adjust to it if he kicks me? The American Top Team Jim does that a lot. I don't know. He just almost seemed like he was in La La Land, and I'm wondering, is his gym evolving? Are they studying tape? Are, like, is Kavanaugh saying, hey, let's watch a few fights here, and he's, no, I can't. I got to do a signing, you know, or I got to do this, or does he feel like I don't have to because I'll knock him out in 60 seconds, it won't matter. Like, I feel like there's a little bit of naivety. Is that a word? On his behalf, you know, but he will make the adjustment because he loves combat sports, and I think he loves that element of it. But again, I sometimes feel like the kid gets caught up in other stuff, and maybe he's not in, all in 100% like a guy like Poirier. Poirier probably checked everything. Did I watch tape? Yes, many times. Did I run? Yes, many times. Did I do every single one of, you know, did I eat a salad when I was supposed to? I mean, I think he checks off every single thing he has to do because he's all in on it. And sometimes I get the feeling that maybe McGregor might not be.
Well, McGregor said all the right things. And I mean, as soon as he was asked that question, he said, no, I'll be back. But don't underestimate the power of family and friends. And when he is done with that fight, even done with the post-press conference, when he goes back into the room and he has a talk with his wife, there is a good chance that she may say, look, man, this family has suffered a lot. You've been away. You've done these training camps. You've accomplished a lot. On the family side, I'd like to see this be over. You know, you don't know what's going to happen when those conversations start to happen. As far as him personally having that drive, I think he does have that drive to come back. And I think he can make adjustments. But you never know once family gets involved and they weigh in. This is a different case that we're looking at. Whenever we talk about Conor McGregor, it's way different. He's got a lot of money, okay? A lot of money. He can go away and he would be fine. It's not like some of these other fighters that are just now starting to cash bigger checks. And even at that, they're nowhere near checks that Conor McGregor gets. So it's a different case. I think when he goes back and talks to family, maybe things might change. But I think all signs would point to Conor McGregor being back. And I think the same way Habib needs to feel challenged and all that, I think Conor's the same way. He has to have a fight that means something to him. And that's why I think that Nate Diaz fight does mean something to him.
We shall see. He's bounced back before from his losses, for sure. And I'd love to see another five McGregor fights, including if one is of merit, a title fight. But he needs to win a couple now. If he would have beaten Poirier after beating Cerrone, McGregor obviously should be involved in a title fight, whether it was against Habib or whoever. The same way we're speaking about Poirier should be involved in a title fight of some sort. In fact, I thought McGregor and Poirier should have been for a title if Habib is in fact done, which it sounds like it. But yeah, he will have to win a few fights. And who those people will be, I don't know. I think one of them just finally needs to be Nate Diaz. And the other one, well, maybe Ferguson. You know, I'm just thinking two guys coming off losses that were at the top of the game. Now, what that becomes is not a loser leave town, because I don't think either guy would get cut, but a loser leaves a lot of momentum behind. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. As it is right now, you know, Ferguson's probably like the seventh name down the list when you talk about, well, who's next at lightweight? You know, you can go through a lot of names before you get to Ferguson because he's got the two losses. Here, I'll do it right now. I mean, there's Habib, there's Poirier, there's Chandler, there's Gaethje, and there's Oliveira. There's five. I could probably come up with a sixth, but regardless, the point's made. So he's going to have to win a couple, you know. Diaz versus Conor is hot at any moment. Is it going to break 1.65? Who knows? But it's still going to be big for the company and big for both guys. Poirier versus Nate Diaz, I don't want to see it. Not because I don't want to see them scrap. I do. It's just I think Poirier just needs to either fight for a title or fight someone else. Maybe Poirier versus Diaz would have made sense after he lost to Habib. But he came back for Hooker, you know, and then he took on Chandler. So we'll see. I think the first things first is they got to have that meeting with Habib in Vegas this week. And that'll tell us if he's out. If he's out, and if he is, then we figure out who's fighting for the title. Or if he's in, then who he has chosen, who along with the UFC they have chosen to fight. If they take Oliveira, well, you can't have Poirier versus Chandler again. You could have Poirier versus Diaz. I think McGregor needs a little bit of time off. No, though not a lot, because another thing McGregor said was that time off is killing him, you know, which I think a lot of us know. It is a lot, you know. Even if you're putting in hard work, it doesn't matter. You know, I think those fighters that are fighting at their best are the ones that have some sort of a frequency, at least 3 fights in 2 years. But you just can't be once a year. You cannot do that for too long. You got to have a few of those years where you pull off maybe 3 of them or 2 of them or whatever.
Who's to say we can't have Chandler Poirier? Just because Poirier says it, that doesn't mean shit to me. The UFC, if they make up their mind and they say this is who's left, guess what? He's fighting Michael Chandler. I mean, I know they respect the kid a lot, and I respect him as well. I understand what he's saying, but he doesn't call the shots. The UFC calls the shots. And if that's the route that they go, then I would think it's almost foolish not to take that fight.
He almost said it. Like, if they do say it, he still won't do it. I don't know if that's true or not, because he said, when they asked him, have you ever thought about retiring? He says, funny you bring that up. I've talked to my wife, but we've talked about how I've done everything I want except that undisputed title. Because once you're an undisputed champ, he says, you're called champ forever. He is an interim champ, but I think he still wants that undisputed champ. So that's the only problem, is if that's what he still wants in life and the UFC says, well, here's your chance, then I think you're right, he would fight Chandler.
Have you tried his hot sauce?
I haven't. And frankly, I can't remember if I've heard of it or not before, until he really brought it up. He gave it to him at the weigh-ins, and he brought it up at the thing, and I was like, okay, I gotta look into this. But no, I haven't. Have you?
I'm gonna try it now. I'm gonna order it.
Yeah. I think he said I'll go start selling hot sauce. Poirier marches to the beat of his own drum, that's for sure. But he said it, man. I heard him. I still want to be an undisputed champion. And he told us a few months ago that the blood he spilled, the knocks he's taken, he feels them. He knows they're there, you know, but he's doing good. He's doing good in that regard when it comes to TBI. That's a really, really serious thing. I hope Dan Hooker doesn't retire. I hope Khabib still wants to continue. But, man, what a display for the UFC's lightweight division on Saturday night. Earlier that night, Joanne Calderwood defeated Jessica Ai. She's now 1-4-5. She's saying, hey, give me a title shot against Valentina Shevchenko. Mahmoud Muradov defeated Andrew Sanchez. Marina Rodriguez defeated Amanda Ribas. Arman Tsarukyan defeated Matt Frivola. Brad Tavares defeated Antonio Carlos Jr. Juliana Pena defeated Sarah McMahon. Marcin Prochniak defeated Khalil Roundtree. Movsar Evloev defeated Nick Lentz, who, by the way, Nick Lentz says he's done, he's retired. He put it on social media. Amir Albazi defeated ZZ, because I attempted his last name. The bonuses, $50,000, went to Dustin Poirier, Michael Chandler, Mahmoud Muradov, and Marina Rodriguez. So there are 4 performance of the night bonuses. No one got a fight of the night. You have a problem with the bonuses at all, or?
Nah, I mean, it's funny because as you were going through the results, I just remembered how good that card was, top to bottom, how much fun it was. I do want to bring up one thing, and it's one where I actually give a touch of gloves to Dana White. Maybe I'm revealing my touch of gloves here for what we do on the Triple G Show with Richard Hunter, but I hate backflips too. And the second Michael Chandler got up on top of there and did that backflip, I cringed, man, because he's right. One of those is not going to go their way. One day it's going to happen. It's happened in every other sport. Remember Joe Montana running out, giving high fives and jamming his finger? Remember Gus Frerotte running his head into the wall? Like, it happens in every sport. So what I don't understand is why we got to wait until this happens to just outlaw it.
Well, no, they're outlawed. The commission doesn't want them. They don't even want them riding the cage. And the UFC, I'm sure, has told them. It's just that these guys go into this other zone after a big win, most of the time a knockout, and there's just no stopping them. You even see the commission officials can't get in there in time. The ref is waving the fight off and sometimes holding, cradling the fighter that may have gotten knocked out, or at least making sure that there's not an extra stroke. So it's a race between can you catch that guy? And no one was going to catch Michael Chandler. You could even tell him before the fight, hey, don't jump on the pit, on the cage because there's an electric current. If you jump on up there, you'll get zapped. And he'd probably forget about it. I think they just entered the zone. Now, Chandler was saying, I've never jumped off the cage before. He's jumped on the cage and rode it. He says he's done backflips in the octagon, but he says this is the first time he did it, a la Justin Gaethje, who's done it multiple times. But you're right, Gil. When he did it, man, it looked spectacular, you know? And all I was praying for was stick that landing. He landed and then I think did a cartwheel. But, yeah, that something like that could really, really – you're right, Gil. Mikey Burnett, and his career ended from headbutting the wall, right?
Yeah, on tough. I'll tell you how you stop that. Anybody who does that's ineligible for a bonus. Boom. Done.
I think they'll forget, though. They'll still forget at that time. I don't think they remember. It's a rage, except they're happy. So it's euphoric. It's like a soccer player where you tell them, you're going to get a yellow card if you take off your shirt. And a lot of them just do it and then remember, oh, you know, and – yeah, I think a lot of – they have the luxury of two yellow cards and you're off. But if you score a goal in the 88th minute and you haven't taken it off yet, it's the final of a cup, then you'll gladly take it and serve whatever repercussions with the next yellow card the next time out, you know. But I don't know. I think a lot of them just – so.
I'm telling you, one day it's going to happen. And when it happens, the next day they're going to somehow figure out a way to outlaw it. And we're all –
that might be one way that it stops.
Yeah, we're
if somebody doesn't get hurt, that might be one way where you just go, oh, whoa, you know, and you know, I think, I don't know.
Yeah.
That was nuts. It was a great event, folks, and we don't know what's going to happen. I mean, stuff got cleared up. We know Connor and Hooker can't fight for the title, but at this point, we don't even know if Chandler could fight for this title. Heck, there's a chance Poirier might not even fight for the title if they go Khabib versus Oliveira, if Khabib sticks around. But check out MMA Junkie throughout the week. Like I said, the plan was that Khabib was going to be in Vegas. Dana was going to be in Vegas. And I think they were going to talk about, did you see anything that impressed you? Dana White already told us that he kind of had a chat, not a proper sit down, but I think they probably passed each other in the hall or something. And early inclinations were that Khabib wasn't impressed, but I don't know. I really don't know. Did he even ever say it? You know, did he just tell him, no, I'm retiring? You know, did Dana White just string us along? Who knows? Dana had a dejected look to him, and I'm not saying it's because he was hoping McGregor would win. Of course he was hoping that, but I think it was just probably a 1-2 punch of McGregor losing and then Khabib not being wild, or maybe him just not being able to talk to him. Now, I apparently on the last Dana White Looking for a Fight episode, they caught him talking to Khabib, you know, saying, hey, this thing with Poirier and McGregor's trending to be pretty big. Imagine if McGregor wins, how big you and him would be. And Khabib just kind of looks at him like, you know, and then, but almost like, you're the boss, I'm going to give you a laugh here, but I told you I'm retired. You know, like there wasn't like a or, well, we'll see. Like there wasn't any of that. He just kind of laughed it off like, I'm being polite here, but I think I've already stated my case. Did you catch that?
Yeah.
So we'll see. All right, folks, that's it for today. Thank you so much for being a supporter of the show by tuning in here on Sportscaster Mondays and Thursdays, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Last Saturday was tremendous, our watch along. So hopefully you watch the fights along with us. We try and do that every month for all the big pay-per-views. We'll huddle up with the Sportscaster team and see if we're in for UFC 258. That's headlined by Kamaru Usman and Gilbert Burns. UFC 259 is in March. They got two UFCs in March. And a lot of the champions are lining up, man. Miocic versus Ngannou, Adesanya versus, I should say, Błachowicz versus Adesanya, because Błachowicz will be defending his belt. Amanda Nunes is back. Sterling and Jan finally figured out a date. You know Figueiredo ain't going to wait too long before he signs. So I think we're just waiting on Volkanovski and Ortega. Or did that one get signed?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think that might be that other March one. So a lot of good stuff's coming up. So keep it locked on MMA Junkie. Don't forget, we have a great app for all your needs that is free, and you can download it to your mobile phones. It's the MMA Junkie app. It works on tablets and all smartphones. And check out our YouTube page, where we have a lot of the videos that we do, where Goz and I interview fighters outside of here on Sportscaster. And it's youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo. And lastly, follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Goz is at the Goz, THEGOZE. I'm at MMA Junkie George. The radio show's at MMA Junkie Radio. Hey, Liverpool. That, and congrats to the Buccaneers and Tom Brady. He's back in the Super Bowl against the Kansas City Chiefs, the defending champions. Any thoughts on that one, Goz? Those two teams?
I mean, I kind of wanted to see Buffalo get there, but it's going to be a fun one. It'll be a good Super Bowl. The whole playoffs have been really good, actually.
They have been, yeah. Super Bowl's in a couple weeks, so congrats to those two teams. All right, folks, we are out of here. Go out there and be a champion.